And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. Hope you are cooking breakfast right now. Hope you're enjoying your Sunday morning. We are wrapping up your Saturday night. I'm here with Ari Wasserman. Mostly this is a proof of life episode. We wanted to make sure everybody knew that Ari was okay after eating the death chip. Ari, please let everybody know. Hold up the newspaper and let everybody know you're all right.
I don't have a newspaper, but I'm here. And Alabama and Florida played a close game. So there's your proof that we're in the future. Exactly. I had a lot. Anybody who saw the video saw me struggling big time. And I got to say, I was anticipating it being really, really hot. The thing I was not anticipating was that it was going to last for as long as it did. Like, it's one thing to be super hot and have like a tough few minutes, but my mouth was on fire an hour later. Like, I was in the shower under a cold stream drinking milk out of a Yeti. And here's the thing that's the toughest part. You need milk to survive it, right? Like, that's the only thing that'll cool you down in your mouth.
You can't drink too much milk too fast.
But if you drink too much milk, you get a stomach ache, and then, of course, the following day is interesting. Now, without getting into too much details, I think from anybody who's ever eaten this chip or is considering eating this chip, and I don't want to be gross. I'm sorry if it is. I don't know which day was worse.
Does it feel the same way coming out as it did going in?
Yes, and I don't know which one was worse. So, like, as everybody was laughing at me on Twitter the day after we published it, that's all well and good, but, like, it wasn't, like, over for me until Saturday morning. So because, like, the milk upsets your stomach. I mean, I drank a half a gallon of milk, and I would have drank more because I only bought a half gallon, and it wasn't enough.
So you don't have kids yet. You don't have to just keep milk by the gallon at your house.
Yeah, we had almond milk, but I wasn't in a position where I was able to chug almond milk. So it was certainly a fascinating night. But finally, like, once it was right under my tongue, and I was like, I don't know, because, like, as I was in the shower, I had moments of, like, really, really hating you, and it's like, now. If we have more bets, or when we have more bets, I might bring that back to the table. Like, I want you to feel what I felt.
I'm fine with that. I understand.
You're like an eating challenge guy, and there is part of interest. There's, like, there's intrigue with you. I think you want to know if you can conquer it.
I have a feeling I'd react the same way you did, but we will see, because I'm sure I'll bet something stupid and lose. So, but we gave out some winners on Friday, Ari. If you listen to Friday's show, we said there's a West Virginia line that is a what does Vegas know about this that we don't line. West Virginia was a 2.5-point favorite. They wind up winning the game. There was Michigan State was a 6-point underdog at Miami, and we said take Michigan State in the points or just take the money line because Michigan State's going to win. And it was this final score. If you didn't watch the game, Michigan State looks like they clobbered Miami. That's not the case. It was 17-14 late, but Michigan State really ran away at the end.
Yeah. So the hardest part with gambling for me is when you ask yourself the question, what does Vegas know? And it's like, if you watch the West Virginia-Virginia Tech game, you know, West Virginia hopped out to a 14-0 lead really, really quickly. But it was just one of those things where Virginia Tech kept shooting themselves in the foot in the most dramatic possible ways. I think they got inside the opposing 10-yard line three times and came away with 0 points, including the last drive of the game when they were there to try to win the game. And it's just like, how do you predict that that's going to happen? Like, how do you predict that a team is going to get inside the 10?
I mean, that one, you've watched that team quite a bit, and you can predict. I mean, they've been very inconsistent over the last few years.
Yeah. I mean, I guess so. It's just like sometimes games are just super weird. It's like the same thing, too, with the Illinois game on Friday night. The Illinois game between Maryland was a 7-point spread. That seemed a little low to me. I thought Maryland would be, you know, much better, especially with their offensive pieces. And it was just a gross game for a half where Maryland couldn't get a first down. And it was like 3-3. And Maryland ended up winning the game with a great comeback at the end. But they didn't cover the spread. And it's like, how does Vegas know it's going to be a weird game? It's like the weirdness factor that I have a hard time with. But, you know, I've learned this year, too, because in the past with me, I've been susceptible to not acknowledging the trap and then sticking my foot in it. I'm trying to say, well, hey, if this doesn't make sense, then I'm either not going to play it or I'm going to bet right into it. And like, that's exactly what we did with West Virginia. It didn't make any sense, but we gave out West Virginia and look, it hit. And it's like anybody who watched the game knows that Virginia Tech was probably the better team or the right side. It just didn't work out for them today.
Now, before we get to Penn State Auburn, which was a very exciting game, great atmosphere, big win for Penn State. They're in such a good position now. I mean, you think about the way they started their season last year and what they were doing now. It's night and day difference. But we got to talk about the games that are sort of reframing our expectations for the season. And Florida, Alabama is one of those. Oklahoma, Nebraska is one of those where I think we can probably say there's not a perfect team this year. There's not a super team this year. Georgia has probably looked the best of any team, but Alabama got pushed around to the tune of 6 yards a carry. You know, Alabama jumps out to the 21-3 lead against Florida. And I was at the game. And Ari, there's a moment when it's 21-3. There's a 2nd and 10 play. Emory Jones misses a wide open receiver, just throws it wide of him. The crowd boos. The next play, Dan Mullen calls a run right up the middle for Emory Jones. 4-yard gain, crowd boos again. They get bailed out by a pass interference call on 4th and 6, and they wind up scoring. And then all of a sudden, everything flips. Florida is beating Alabama at the line of scrimmage, play after play after play, and shutting down Alabama's offense. And, I mean, I'm not used to seeing anybody do that to Alabama. You know, the 6 yards a carry that Florida averaged, the last time anybody averaged that much per carry against Alabama was the 2011 Georgia Southern game when they averaged 7.7 yards a carry. And 4 years later, Nick Saban had a very saucy quote about that game. That's the they went through us like, you know what, through a tin horn. So that's how unusual that Florida game was. And oh, by the way, the guy who is probably Florida's best player did not play. Anthony Richardson would have been the quarterback on the 2-point conversion at the end. I have no doubt in my mind of this. He had a bad hammy. If he'd have been available to play, he would have been the quarterback. They'd have gone empty backfield, and he either runs it in or it's a Tebow jump pass, and it would have worked.
I've got so many thoughts right now. One, how long was that mesh point?
It's the Wake Forest one. Clawson does. Yeah. It felt like it lasted for 5 minutes. And our friend Gabe Eichard, he posted a screenshot of if Emory Jones just lets Malik Davis take the ball right at the start of it, it's Malik Jones walks into the end zone. It was blocked perfectly. And listen, I didn't think I'd be here telling you any play was blocked perfectly by Florida against Alabama. And there were a lot of plays that were blocked perfectly by Florida against Alabama. They dominated them up front in that second half.
It looked pretty when Jamie Newman was doing it. I don't know what the plan is there, because if you're hesitating for a second against that team, then you're hesitating for a second too long.
Right.
But I've got this game to me, I think, is the perfect place to kind of really go into this podcast, because I think it's an indication of one thing, which is if you do the transitive property, everybody sucks. And then we'll get to that and what you meant to like.
I believe our friend Dan Wolkin wrote that column in USA Today, which is about as Dan Wolkin a take as you're going to get.
Yeah,
and
well, I
say that with great affection for Dan.
Yeah, but the other thing I wanted to do is I wanted to talk about Florida for a second before we go into everybody sucks. Florida is the only team over the course of the past 2 years that has given us an entertaining game where we felt like the other team could beat Alabama. And it just like Florida's got my respect across the board.
But this was a different, it was a completely different game. And that's what makes it interesting, because that game against Alabama in the SEC championship game was a shootout. This was a slugfest. And
they did it in both ways.
Yes. And Florida's completely changed their offense. Now, this is very similar to what Dan Mullen ran at Mississippi State. So it's not unfamiliar to him. But as he said after the game, he's just learning how to call plays for Emory Jones. And I do think Emory Jones solidified his hold on the starting quarterback job, because, you know, there was a lot of noise about, oh, Anthony Richardson needs to start. I don't think Anthony Richardson is going to win the starting job right away. I think he may wind up being the Tebow to Emory Jones's Chris Leak, if that makes sense. Even though they're not as stylistically different as those two, he still might be better in certain situations. One of those situations would have been the two-point conversion.
Yes. Yeah. But it just, like, to me, had me thinking, like, in order for you to do what Florida did to Alabama, you just physically have to be very good. There's no other way. That doesn't happen by accident. You physically have to be a very good football team. And I just, and it brings me back, and I know sometimes this might be annoying to people, but like when I think about the recruiting results and how not great it's been for Florida, it's just like I would kill to see Dan Mullen call a game with Alabama's roster, or I would kill to see Dan Mullen, you know, call a game with Clemson or Ohio State's roster, Georgia's roster, because he seems like a hell of a coach, man. I mean, like, you don't, that stuff doesn't happen by accident.
Right.
And it's like, at Florida, everything seems to be clicking except the one thing that needs to be clicking. And it's kind of like annoying to me, because it's like, it's all right there to me.
Now, this was a night where basically every recruit that Florida really wants was there. And I don't know if that helped. They did lose, but there's a part of you where you can go in there and say to the player, well, if we had you, we'd have won this game.
I think that's actually more powerful. And I think when a recruit goes to a game, they're looking at the atmosphere.
The atmosphere was, at the stadium, was electric. Yeah.
And it looked like a typical swamp atmosphere. And if you can look at the guy and say, hey, look how close we are to beating Alabama. Add a few of you guys on the roster, we're going to be the new kings of the SEC. That's a powerful sales pitch. So, like, to me, well, I don't always think that winning and losing matters that much. Unless it's an embarrassing loss.
Because after watching Georgia's defense that first game, I was thinking, oh no, it was Florida. I'm not sure they're going to be able to move the ball at all on Georgia. That changes for me now after watching this, because they did move the ball on Alabama. I don't know necessarily what that means against Georgia, but I look at that and say, you know what? Alabama, Georgia, and Florida may not be at that far apart, the three of them. And, you know, I don't think there's a moral victory in this for Florida. There are plenty that they had a missed PAT. They had a dropped interception that would have eliminated an Alabama score. They had some mistakes that, had they not made them, they would have won the game. And you can crush Dan Mullen if you want for that play call on the 2-point conversion. I think it represents progress that you can, because, you know, I think in the SEC championship game, there really wasn't anything Florida people could complain about with their team. They were mad about the call on the fumble on the interception. That was the one thing that they kept coming back to, but you couldn't really criticize any play call or anything like that. You could criticize a play call, a mistake here, a mistake there. Florida would have won that game. Like, there's, you know, advanced stats that say, you know, Florida's post game win percentage was I think 88% or something like that. Like, if you play that game 100 times, Florida would win it 88 times. So that's the thing that Florida needs to be encouraged by, but not satisfied with, if that makes sense. Because I think I look at that, you know, look, grand scheme, they were going to have to beat Georgia no matter what. Now they just have no margin for error in the other games.
Yeah, yeah. I watched the game and I thought to myself, is this Florida being awesome, or is this Alabama being susceptible with everybody else?
A little bit of both, I think. I think it's a little bit of both. But I do wonder, with a healthy Anthony Richardson, how different does Florida look? Because this, and again, it's hard to say because the two tune-up games were against two pretty bad teams. Florida Atlantic and USF, not very good. But the things he did were shocking.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the interesting part about watching this stuff, because it's all about context. And we're getting more contextual pieces for everybody. And it's just like when you look at the teams as a whole, obviously Alabama's still the shoe-in for being number one. But like your whole call.
Really? I mean, this is
or maybe
is
the Georgia. Whole thing. I mean, it's kind of hard to move Bama.
I don't care what the rankings are right now. They're for entertainment purposes only. They'll all, you know, especially with the SEC stuff, they'll all play each other eventually, and it'll get figured out. I wouldn't have Alabama number one if I were voting in the AP poll. I'd have Georgia number one. Like it's, and I'd move Florida up based on the way they played, but I just move Alabama and Florida closer together. But I don't think that matters. Like I said, that they will play, Florida and Georgia will play. Whoever wins that game will probably play Alabama again. But I will say, look at this game. And you think Alabama's going to go unscathed through the SEC West? Not if they play the way they did tonight.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess just like from a ranking standpoint, they don't really matter. It would be hard to move them down after beating Florida on the road. It's just like, you know, it is what it is. I think that I could make a case, and I think we made the case before the season started, that Georgia's the best team, you know, and as they continue to start putting up some points, and, you know, they're dealing with an uncertain circumstance.
They look pretty good on offense against South Carolina. Look,
so
yeah, South Carolina's, you know, not good, but JT Daniels looked good.
Yeah.
And they looked cohesive offensively.
Yeah, and they would be my pick for favorite to win the national championship, and that was the case before the year. But like when you look at the rest of the top usual teams here, you know, Ohio State is deeply flawed. You know, yep. That's a discussion maybe we'll get into later on in the show. But
well, let's talk about Oklahoma and Nebraska and the game that Nebraska tried to get out of and then wound up only losing by a touchdown.
Yeah, I was watching that game and waiting for Oklahoma to break it open the entire game, and it just never happened. And it's just like, you know, again, with the transitive property, we look at Nebraska losing to Illinois and then Illinois going on doing what they did. It's just like Nebraska's supposed to be god-awful. We're talking about whether or not Scott Frost is
–
you know, and they pushed – I don't know that I ever felt like Nebraska was going to win that game, but they pushed Oklahoma enough where it was, like, uncomfortable. And Oklahoma's had some tough games earlier on in the year too, and you know it hasn't looked that great in two out of the three games. You know they're, you know, I don't know if I guess it's a rivalry game or the 50th anniversary of the game of the century.
Yeah, but
or
it's not a rivalry game to these players. Like I know Oklahoma should just thrash Nebraska, and they didn't.
But it's just like it seemed like it mattered to Nebraska a lot, though.
Yeah, but Oklahoma looks uncomfortable throwing the ball down the field. Looks like they do not trust Spencer Rattler to throw the ball down the field the way they trusted Jalen Hurts and Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield.
I agree. And it's like they have the weapons. I mean, they've got Mario Williams. They've got Mim. I mean, they got guys. And Kennedy Brooks is a really good running back. So, you know, it just, to me, do you feel like Oklahoma's a legitimate national championship contender watching them play? No. Do you feel that way about Clemson having lost to Georgia and then, you know, we're
Clemson looked, and I realize there was a long lightning delay, but Clemson looked really bad against Georgia Tech.
They don't seem to have the same top level talent that we've been accustomed to seeing. And it's kind of crazy when you drop a Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence off the roster, it might be more normal than you would think.
Yeah.
Ohio State's got a laundry list of issues. Like,
yeah. This doesn't even look like the Kelly Bryant Clemson teams, the 2017 one.
Yeah. It looks worse.
We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
You mentioned Ohio State. They messed around again with Tulsa. They did not look great again. And if I'm the rest of the Big Ten, if I'm Penn State, if I'm Iowa, if I'm Wisconsin, I'm looking at this like, whoo, this might be the year.
I think it is. I think that I would say that I do not think that they're going to win the rest of their games, which is not something that I would have probably said a month ago at all. And maybe not something I would have said even a week ago, but they've got inherent defensive issues, personnel, scheme, and coaching, which is, you know, the three-pronged problem there. Their offense, it kind of looks like their offense is trying to run the clock out against an overmatched team like Tulsa. You know, CJ Stroud had some shoulder injury concerns, but he doesn't seem comfortable in the pocket and, you know, is afraid to run, it seems. And, you know, just like when you look at the entire team, they just play like they're not having any fun. They're slow, they're discombobulated, and it's just like there's something wrong there. Now, the good news for Ohio State is that they have a few weeks of overmatched opponent to try to iron something out. So by the time they get deep into the Big Ten play and have to, you know, play a Penn State, they might figure it out. But as things stand right now, this looks like a 9-3 team. This doesn't look like a playoff team at all.
Speaking of Big Ten teams that have played overmatched opponents, is Michigan good or do we know anything yet?
They look good. They look like they're having fun. They're playing with a certain, I don't know how to describe it, but a certain like passion about them. They like the thing I know Washington,
a little swag as the kids. Are you allowed to have swag if you go to Michigan?
I don't know. All I know is they were popping helmets off against Washington. They were hitting hard. They're flying to the football. They've got some youthful talent on their team, you know, and I've fallen into the trap the same way I have with Texas of they're back too early on in the year. And I'm like, still have that Wisconsin game in October circled that we've been talking about.
Of course.
To see like what they're going to be. But right now, it's just like if Michigan is in a position where they feel like, hey, we need to beat Ohio State just for our sanity, just for the idea that the program can get to where it needs to go. Looking at the way things look right now, you know, Michigan looks like the more complete, confident team. Now, November's a long, long way away. But
let's not completely 2018 this, Ari.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I look at Ohio State and I'm like, there is something wrong. So if they can fix it, that's fine. But I don't know if you can fix personnel issues. I don't know if you can fix who's calling defensive plays. I mean, you're not going to fire a defensive coordinator in the middle of the year. You know, you can have a lot of changes to make. Of all the teams that suck, quote unquote, suck at the top of the rankings, I think Ohio State's the most flawed in that group.
Okay, so you were on the beat in 2014. Was it like this?
No.
In the aftermath of the loss to Virginia Tech?
The loss to Virginia Tech was kind of like they got stunned by a defense that they weren't prepared for, which is crazy enough to say, like, you're a coach, you should be prepared for every defense. And they had a quarterback who was unexpectedly thrown into play as a freshman after Braxton Miller's arm fell off. So when they turned things around, you know, it was a gradual build and you didn't know that Ohio State was for real until the end of October. But the context has changed too. Ohio State, with the way they've recruited in the time since, is already a national championship contender before the season starts. You're viewing them as playoff or bust. Back then, the playoff was in its first year. You didn't really view them the way that you'd view them now. So like the idea of can this team get back into a situation where it's competing for a national championship and comparing it to 2014, this team is far more discombobulated than the 14 team was. They had to get JT Barrett confident. They had to shore up some things in their defense. But like when you look at the talent on that roster, it was all over the place everywhere. And I look at Ohio State and the best things about them are their freshmen. So like that might be good for 2 or 3 years down the line, but in my opinion, I completely remove Ohio State from any discussion of winning a national championship this season or even competing for
one. Well, okay. So that gets into my theme here. And I wrote a column about this coming off the Florida-Alabama game. I think we're going to get something different this year. And yes, this is all we've been waiting for. We felt like, you know, you're going to have to expand the playoff to get something different. But it's entirely possible that we might just get something different. So maybe Alabama's still in it. Maybe Oklahoma still winds up in the playoff. But I don't see a path for Clemson. You just said you don't think Ohio State gets in. Like, I think we should have a different Big Ten team. Now, there might be two SEC teams. I think this does open the path for two SEC teams. But
yeah, it's like right now, it looks like you're going to have Oregon, Alabama and Georgia, Oregon and Oklahoma. That would be new, right?
That would be new, but I'm not sure Oklahoma gets there. The way Oklahoma's playing, they don't go through the Big 12 unscathed, and they may not go through the Big 12 with only one loss. They might drop a couple.
Yeah.
As we are talking, Ole Miss is playing Tulane. The third quarter just started. Ole Miss has scored 40 on Tulane already. Like, that's how you pound Tulane at home. Oklahoma didn't do anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. I am a little wary of the idea that, you know, we're disqualifying teams in mid-September. But this is a podcast. Oh, I know. And we're not really. It's fun. But it's like, you don't really see a path for Clemson. I see a path. They're not losing again in a weak ACC. The one-loss conference champion at the end of the year.
Sure. I'm not sure they go undefeated in the ACC, though, the way they're playing.
Which team is the biggest? You mean, I guess somebody will sneak up and get them?
They all, Georgia Tech was within 6 points of them at Clemson tonight.
Yeah.
Most of the ACC is better than Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
Wake Forest is better than Georgia Tech. NC State's better than Georgia Tech. North Carolina's better than Georgia Tech. Now, I don't know.
They so you're just like basically season. Picking the field. There's no game that you'd be like, this is the
no,
trouble.
No, there's
game.
No specific game. Like yeah. Boston College, I know, gave him trouble last year, and their quarterback's good. But no, I don't know that there's a specific game. But if they're just not that capable on offense, every game's going to be hard for them. You know,
yeah.
That Georgia Tech game was hard for them. And that was an opponent that they just blew away most times. Like that's not an opponent that typically gives them trouble. So that's the part where I wonder how that goes. But Alabama, the same way. The way Alabama played at Florida, Alabama still got to play Ole Miss. They got to play Texas A&M. They got to play the Auburn team we saw in Happy Valley that you know didn't look great but gave Penn State a great game, and Penn State's a pretty good team. Like, are they going to get – they got to play the Arkansas team that crushed Texas? Like, are they going to get through unscathed? I don't know. And maybe this was just Alabama's worst game. I have no idea. But they looked more vulnerable than they have looked in a long time.
I mean, usually at this point of the season, though, you're seeing 70-10 Clemson scores. Ohio State's winning 63-14. You know, you're looking at a bunch of teams and you're saying, hey, you know, you've got four superpowers and will one of them happen to lose? And it's just like, I don't know if you wanted to put $1,000 of your own money down if any of the teams that are unbeaten or are now entering conference play, you would take them to go undefeated in their conference.
Speaking of all this, could this be the year that a good group of five team, undefeated, of course, gets in? Because Cincinnati got a tough game from Indiana, but pulled away at the end. They're playing Notre Dame in a couple weeks. They're at Notre Dame. Nothing Notre Dame has done suggests that they can beat Cincinnati.
Well, I told you on the show earlier this week that I thought that Cincinnati was going to beat both of them. So I was a little bit sweaty when Cincinnati was down pretty big in the Indiana game. Indiana played a pretty good game, yeah. But now I don't even know what the spread's going to be next week, and I guess we could try to make it up right now. But I'm taking Cincinnati with any points next week.
I would bet that Notre Dame will be favored, but by less than a touchdown.
Yeah, I'm taking any points, whether it's two or seven.
Yeah, it's gonna be really interesting. Let's get to the Penn State Auburn game. You and I were texting during the game, and you basically said, "What's the difference between these teams? This is the same team, right?"
Yeah, the same program and the same stature in their conferences, and they both have the same main color. I think it was clear that Penn State was the better football team, and you know, I think sometimes too we get so bogged down by the national championship context that we forget that the second tier teams in these conferences are putting on a show in a packed stadium on Saturday night. And I just thought that game was fun as hell. Well, you know,
here's the thing. Those will be potential playoff teams when there's a 12 team playoff.
Right.
Like in they might not both make it, but one of those teams is getting into a 12 team playoff. And that's where I think that makes that even more exciting, because that type of game, which we're going to see more of because they're going to schedule more good out-of-conference games, because you're going to be able to lose games and make it, that type of game could be a playoff elimination game in the future.
Right. And that game in its current form was fun as hell. Imagine that. Now, I don't want to take Penn State out of the national championship discussion right now, because they could win the Big Ten. They've done it before, and they've beaten Ohio State teams that were better than this one and played them pretty closely. So, you know, Penn State is a tough game for Ohio State every year, and I can't imagine what that game's going to be like if Penn State's confident and Ohio State's running in 19 different directions. So, you know, they're still firmly alive in it, but, you know, to see them, an SEC team, go north is something that we don't see very often. And to watch them play in a stadium like that in a game that was nationally televised was just a really fun game to watch. And, you know, I always thought Penn State played a really good game and probably could have won by even more if they didn't have some weird ref calls kind of get in the way.
Yeah, there were some odd calls. Penn State played a basically mistake-free game. There was the Clifford interception there at the end of the first half. They probably could have tacked on some more points. But they made fewer mistakes than Auburn did. Auburn had a key fumble, and the play call, the fade call on fourth and goal was atrocious. And listen, I will channel all of the Auburn fans who, you know, laughed at the Georgia fans for years when they were like, "Run the damn ball, Bobo." Well, now you know how it feels. Now you know how it feels when you got a Tank Bigsby who's running the ball well. Hunter, who was basically Mario on that drive, like jumping over the Goombas or jumping over the Venus flytraps. Or Bo Nix, who is very good with his legs. Like
that. Don't you at least want to see
that's Bo a spot Nix for a read option right there. Maybe not the slow mesh one for the Florida game, but that's the spot.
You at least want to see Nix roll out and have multiple options, you know?
Yes. Yes.
The fade?
Bo Nix is not known for his drop back prowess. So why would you put him in that position? I mean, basically you're hoping a PI gets called, which it's not ironic, but remember Penn State gets backed up on the goal line after that. And you think Auburn might be able to you know, sack Clifford for a safety or something like that and suddenly get back in the game. But what happens? They throw it up to Dotson, PI, and they're out of trouble. Which I think is what Auburn was trying to do on the goal line.
To draw a PI on fourth and goal on the road like that, then walk home. That's what my buddy Bill Landis tweeted, and it's true. It's like, come on, try to score.
Yeah. Do what you do well. You have two incredible backs. Your line is blocking well. Your quarterback runs well. You got to give yourself a chance.
Oh, man. It's like the fade at the goal line and the Wildcat. Oh,
and by the way, who's covering on that play?
Isn't the most athletic player on Penn State's
team? Jaquan Brisker. I think Jaquan Brisker is my favorite player in the country this year. He's just he was unbelievable against Wisconsin, and he was great again against Auburn.
Yeah. You don't throw at the other team's most agile player when the game's on the line from the 2-yard line. Yeah. It's like sometimes it's like Penn State deserved to win the game, and it was a weird way that it ended, but you know, I guess it just kind of worked out for the best, because that's kind of the way it should have probably gone. So, you know, You got another national championship contender in the Big Ten. So, you know, it just kind of gives us a little.
This is so much fun because, okay, right now, if I told you Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, Wisconsin won the Big Ten at the end of the year, you'd believe me.
What?
If I told you Florida, Georgia, Alabama, or Texas A&M won the SEC this year, you'd believe me.
I would, yeah.
I mean, the Big 12, if Oklahoma doesn't get right, there's probably four teams that could win the Big 12. Don't put your hook 'em down. Yeah, house by Arkansas. Come on.
I'm just teasing you.
But it is.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
That's where we're at. This feels completely different. Okay, let me ask.
And I'm not convinced that Oregon's going to win the Pac-12. By the way,
I'm not either. I'm not totally convinced either. I want to see them. I want to see them do this consistently.
What if UCLA is my sneaker Pac-12 pick? And I think as we're recording this right now, UCLA is losing to Fresno State by 10. So, you know, do with that as you will.
I'm not betting against UCLA again this year. So, though I did. You know, find a culinary treat in the peel on banana. But
have you eaten another one that in your own
time? Yeah, I did it to show my kids. They were like, you're not going to do it again. I was like, oh yeah, I will. And I did. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
I have a theory. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
This is why this is happening. The teams that are at the top, everybody who was going to go into the draft went into the draft because the teams at the top produce the highest draft picks. And of course you were going to go if you're going to be drafted high. But everybody who was kind of borderline, who had an extra year because of the mulligan, stayed. And it raised the level of play for those teams that were slightly below and got them that much closer to the ones that are above.
I mean, it'd be an interesting case study if you saw how many super seniors or how many people who were fringe, like if you like added it up and just did the upsets and saw it, that would, you know, I think that on theory that makes a lot of sense. It'd be cool to kind of get the numbers on that.
Yeah. We need to find out. And this is hard to quantify is how many guys who probably would have been fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounders came back, because those are really good college players. Usually, those are quality starters on a college team. And if you get two or three of those that you didn't think you were going to have, your team is a lot better.
I remember when I was doing the TCU State of the Program, I was just having a conversation with Gary Patterson because I was reporting it. And Gary told me that he said it's impossible for them to know how good their team is going to be in the Big 12, because it's impossible to quantify how these super seniors are going to make these teams, how much better they're going to make these teams. They're deeper. That's another thing, too, depth-wise. It might not just only be a fourth, fifth, sixth-round pick. You might have somebody on your bench that comes in when somebody's injured, or somebody who's playing depth snaps that is much better than the person otherwise would have been.
Nick Saban, after the game, said that Alabama needs to find more players capable of playing, that they're comfortable putting in the game. I mean, if you saw Will Anderson after the game, like, there was genuine concern that he was really hurt. And he's like, no, I'm just tired. It's really tired. And the Alabama defensive front looked completely gassed by the end of the game. So they've got to find more guys to rotate in. And that means playing more young guys, but that means risking more mistakes from young guys. So I do
think that Alabama of any team would not be in that position.
But how many guys did they lose in the draft last year?
I know. I mean, I know. Yeah, and that's why I think the two of us thought they were overrated coming into the year. It was overrated as you, meaning number one instead of number two.
Right. But well, it's like when the over-unders came out and their over-under was 11.5, and we immediately said, pick the under. Because
yeah, it's like something's going to happen.
It would be hard. It's hard enough to go 12-0 anyway. But given everything they lost, 11-1 is a perfectly reasonable record for them, and it still puts them in the SEC championship game probably.
Yeah. Also, just to let everybody know that Ole Miss scored again, so they're on pace for.
No! Ole Miss has scored twice since the last time.
Twice in the third quarter. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Yes. 54 points with 11 minutes to go in the third quarter.
Yeah. Ole Miss Alabama is going to be an banger. Absolute rager. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
I might see if they'll let me go to Oxford for that one.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. This is great because. I'm hoping now that this will lend to more middle tier games being more important. You know,
yes.
Maybe the Auburn Penn State game will look back in a month from now and say, holy crap, that game meant the world. Now it's not going to determine anybody's conference race.
Like, what's Texas A&M Ole Miss going to mean?
Right.
What's Arkansas Texas A&M is next week. That game sounds really good right now.
It does. Yes. And this is fun. I think the sport needs this. And I think I think they need it in a way that it's not manufactured. I think it is what makes it best.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I think they're going to expand the playoff just because there are conferences that just need that. And you and I have covered over and over the reasons recruits cluster at these top schools and how that may not change. And so this year may be an anomaly, but let's enjoy it if that's what it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? When's the last time we had a year like this? I mean, I don't know.
It's not going to go full 2007, but the Florida State Auburn year felt like that. Now, Florida State was really good the whole year long, but Auburn at this point in that season, in that 2013 season, if you'd have told somebody Auburn was going to win the SEC and play for the national title, they would have said you were insane.
And they also had the greatest player of our generation, maybe, right?
Nick Marshall?
What year did you just say?
2013.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's it. But, like, I honestly just don't know. I just don't know what, like, it's just like, if it's going to be different, how different? Because it's like Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, Clemson is certainly a potential. I mean, all the teams are a potential, but I was like, I want to see Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see. And
maybe Oklahoma grows up. Like Oklahoma this time last year wasn't very, very good either.
Yeah. And it's like Iowa State.
Great by the end of last season.
Iowa State is, I mean, they got thumped a little bit by Iowa, but, you know, they have a history of losing non-conference games. And the next thing you know, it's November and they've only lost one game. You know, it's like Iowa State is a one-loss conference champion as an attractive playoff candidate. You know, and if these teams don't get things together, you know, you're opening the door for somebody to walk through there. But, also, you know, the group of five, too, it's like in a year like this, too, because every single year we do this to ourselves where we try to make fetch happen with the group of five teams. But it's like in a world where there are no elite teams and people are middling around the way that they are right now, Cincinnati is beating Indiana and maybe not anymore because Indiana's had a rough go of it this year. But beating Indiana and Notre Dame in back-to-back weeks enough to make Cincinnati a legitimate national championship contender or playoff contender if they're undefeated at the end of the year?
Well, and here's the thing. It's not supposed to matter what happened last year, but I guarantee you it does because Cincinnati did this last year. And so whether the playoff committee members actually want to take that into account or not, they're not supposed to, but I bet it will be in the back of their minds.
Yeah, they're human.
Cincinnati did this last year. Cincinnati went toe-to-toe with Georgia in the Peach Bowl and looked like they belonged on the field. Like that.
You can't say that there's the way that you view a team is completely impacted by how you feel about them, and how you feel about them is impacted by how they did last year. Yes, so I know that it's like not the same criteria, but there are inherent biases that are just innate in how we think about teams. And like, I think the way that I think about Cincinnati now is certainly impacted by how good they were a year ago and the fact that they still have Ritter back.
Well, and that's the thing. And it's like UCF, the year after they went undefeated, they were higher in the rankings the whole time. They were afforded more respect, and they still make the playoff, but it felt like they were more respected that second time around.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think also Cincinnati's in that boat.
It impacts teams that are also in the playoff all the time. I think if you go back and you look at even when I was covering Ohio State for the few years that I was, they were left out one year, and then the following year they were brought in, and they were left out the wrong year and brought in as a makeup in the right year. And it's just like, if they would have flipped it, maybe Ohio State would have won a national championship. But they kept trying to, you know, make up for the past, I feel like. And I know they would never say that in a million years, but it's just part of the deal. So, and I, you know what? I don't even hate that. If that became part of the criteria, I wouldn't even hate it. Like if it leaked that Cincinnati went undefeated this year and they got in the playoff this year because they were pretty good last year too, I'd be like, fine. Because it's real.
That's why an Alabama gets the benefit of the doubt in 2017 because they were pretty good the last, you know, 6 years before that. You know,
because all these committee members want that is that when they finally set the field that they'll get good games. So it looks like they were right.
Right. And interestingly enough, the two most controversial number four choices won the national championship.
Yeah.
So that does reflect well on them. But I can't wait for this, Ari. This is going to be so much fun. Everybody being back in the stadiums has really just sort of changed the way the season feels anyway. And I think we would have been happy with this and thrilled with the way the games are going anyway. But the fact that there are so many teams with real genuine hope to compete for a national title right now makes it a lot of fun for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And every week, the Penn State Auburn games are going to be more and more exciting, and it's going to mean more. And not just in the SEC, it's going to mean more to all of
us.
So
everywhere. Yep.
Yeah, and I am looking forward to still watching the big dogs and see how they react to it. I'm looking forward to seeing how good Alabama is. I want to see if Ohio State can play themselves out of this rut.
At least one of those teams that we're talking about is going to improve dramatically over the season and just be murdering people at the end. Like, we know that. They have too much talent to not do that. But I do think our theory may hold where there are going to be some teams that are just that close to them, and given the right set of circumstances, there's going to be a player who changes things. Like, again, I go back to Florida. Anthony Richardson didn't play against Alabama. What if he's healthy when they play Georgia? How different is that? Is it different at all? Because again, we don't know because he's not played anybody good yet. But like that possibility is so exciting to think
about. You also too have to take into account that it is completely within the realm of possibility that we will be asking the committee members on a conference call in November, how do you view Florida's loss when Richardson wasn't playing against Alabama if they go out and beat Georgia? Ooh, you know, like these are the types of things too. It's just like one of their best, he could be their best player on their team in 2 months. He didn't play against Alabama. They lost by 2 at home. How does the committee take that into account? You know, the same way that the committee takes all sorts of injuries into account. even when your team loses. Like when Ohio State lost to Oregon without the two best players, that has to matter. So like there's a lot of
Ole Miss just scored again.
They did. Do you think they will get to 100? Because Lane Kiffin's the kind of person that will go for it, right?
He might do it. I don't know. Tulane did put the, you know, Tulane was a member, a founding member of the SEC. They left the league in the 60s. But they did win, I believe, three SEC championships. And they've commemorated those championships on their helmet. And it is a shot, basically, at Ole Miss because Tulane has more SEC championships in its history than Ole Miss.
That and logo is tremendous, isn't it?
It is tremendous. But I do think Lane might try to score 100 just because of that.
I'm here for it.
I almost want to stay on the podcast until he does. But we've probably kept people long enough. They probably need to eat their breakfast on a Sunday morning and start getting ready for NFL games. But Ari, this was a really fun Saturday, and I think it probably sets the stage for even bigger ones down the road. And I cannot tell you how excited I am about that.
And the thing that's best about it, Andy, is that it was such a great, entertaining Saturday when there wasn't a lot of hype to the matchups. You know, there were a few good matchups here or there, but that's what the best Saturdays in college football a lot of times are, the ones that don't have the six ones. Top 15 matchups out there. So, you know, I thought that was a very entertaining day, and I think it's going to be a pretty revealing day when it's all said and done.
All right, let's do it. Football and Grits on Monday. We will be back on Wednesday, and Ari will be back on Friday. Ari, we got to make another bet. So start thinking about what lines move you, because
I will.
We got to come up with something.
Yeah, you're eating that chip before the season's over, I'm telling you. You're laughing now. You really enjoyed yourself, but a wise man once told me, it all comes back around in the morning, and the sun's coming up on your end. So it's just
I do not doubt that. I will lose at some point, and I will suffer, but I'm not sticking my finger in my eye. Hopefully,
you know. Now that you mention it, I had a little burning sensation like on my skin around. I was very close to really being in a bad spot there. Mm-hmm. And you should have screamed. It's like everybody was like, why don't you take your gloves off right after you? And it's just like, I'm sorry. My face is on fire. My brain stopped working.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's fine. I'm genuinely curious to know how it feels, but I don't want to know. I want to thank the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers again for beating Kansas by 27 and covering a 26.5-point spread. So I didn't have to do it that time. But yeah, we're probably going to find a line where Ari and I are going to be on opposite sides of it, and I may have to eat the chip. Now, the question is, what is Ari going to have to do?
I'm going to get the easy way out, and I have to eat the banana peel.
That's fine. Yeah. All right. We just flip it. That's fine. I'm perfectly okay with that, because bananas are a big texture food. The banana peel may make you barf. I don't know.
It does seem kind of gross, to be honest.
All right. Okay, so that's it. We'll figure out what the line is. If I lose, I'm eating the death chip. If you lose, you're eating the banana peel and all. We're doing it. Who says we have to be original? We don't need to be original. Run it back. Remix it.
I think everybody wants to see you eat it. Let's be honest. Everybody wants to see you eat it. So if it doesn't move the needle for the banana peel, we can come up with something else. But I think that you eating the chip is going to be hilarious. And it's like, you're also kind of a freak of nature.
So, yeah, I think you might hate the banana. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see what lines strike us for next weekend. And I'm looking forward to seeing what we can do to get some mischief going.
All right. We will talk to you again soon.